Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
And we cover everything related to Prince Edward Island real estate or real estate in general, or maybe just PEI in general. Isn't that it?
Yeah, that's pretty much the topics we cover.
And we go off topic sometimes, but that's okay. So if you're looking to find out about Prince Edward Island real estate, mainly you've come to the right place. And by all means, check out our newsletters, YouTube channels, Twitter feeds, X is Twitter, Instagram, Threads. We're everywhere.
We are everywhere.
So our first topic, there's a couple seasonal topics in this podcast. It's the beginning of March here. The ice is finally starting to melt. And what we're getting is we're getting a lot of requests for people wanting to view properties that aren't very easily viewable. Are you finding that?
Well, not so much right now, but that is the season that we're about to come up upon where travelers are coming to the island. They want to take a look because they're trying to prepare for their summer vacation or their summer experience. So they're starting in March to look at some of these properties, not realizing the accessibility is not the greatest.
What happens this time of the year is the frost comes out of the ground. And of course, the snow is melting. In front of us, there's still lots of snow and ice. We're on the Charlottetown waterfront, so the Hillsborough River is pretty well all water now, except for the more shallow, narrower areas towards Brighton. But when you're driving around the island, a lot of these roads that you may have to go down, particularly for seasonal properties, may it be a cottage or a waterfront home that's used seasonally, or waterfront acreage or building lot is going to be very difficult to get to. So what happened is I had a few calls this week, one person wanting to see a cottage. It was actually an agent that wanted to show it, and I told them they're welcome to show it. However, the other thing you're going to find on the island is a lot of these subdivisions and communities for cottages or seasonal usage are roped or chained off. So in this case, it would have been a 2-kilometer walk to the cottage on the North Shore, which wouldn't be the most enjoyable walk in this kind of weather.
Well, we did have some pretty mild temperatures, which almost felt a little on the balmy side for a few days, but we're back into, yeah, it's pretty cold and doing a couple kilometer walk, which some of these properties would consist of. You got to make sure you're bundled up still.
Not only that, they made an offer on this property and they had in there a home inspection condition. So I called the agent. And I asked him if he was intending to do this home inspection. I said, is the home inspector going to walk in for 2 kilometers with a ladder on his back? And he said, yes. So he has better connections with home inspectors than I do.
Well, and another thing to take note of is aside from accessing these properties, which is a bit of a challenge, they're also all winterized, which means the plumbing is probably not turned on in the water. So, you know, you have to be able to plan and allow for that, because if it's going to take you a long period of time to get there, then while you're trying to tour it and then the walk back, and then a lot of these places are a little bit of a distance away from a nearest gas station or something, doesn't make for the most pleasant experience, showing experience.
If you're highly motivated, go for it. If you're not, then you're probably not going to be able to drive to these properties. Next topic, are you making a 48-hour offer? So what a 48-hour offer is, you're making an offer conditional upon selling your house. In the case that your offer is accepted and another acceptable offer comes in, you're granted 48 hours to remove your 48-hour or your condition to sell your house. Having said that, a experienced, knowledgeable agent would typically look at what you're selling. So my advice to you is if you are making an offer contingent on you selling your house, make sure that your property, if it's already listed on MLS, it's not a for sale by owner or FSBO, you've got good pictures, video, description, it's at market price. This would make your offer more attractive than someone going in that doesn't have their house listed and is going to price it over market and is going to list with someone that doesn't have any marketing plan or whatever. Yeah. Polish your house and your listing up before you make the offer.
Yeah, they're waiting until they find a place before they actually submit their offer. And unfortunately, and I've come across this many times this year, where the buyer hasn't even started the process to put their property on the market yet. And the agent who is submitting this offer. And 48 hours, that's our standard amount of time allowed to the buyer should the seller receive another offer to be able to hopefully firm up their contract agreement and remove it. But some agents, if you're on the buyer's side, you may try to go for 72 hours. So that's not a black and white rule. But if you're a seller and you receive this offer, my advice to you would be to keep it to 48 hours. If they're not in a position to remove their clause within 48, they're probably not going to be in a position, allowing for long weekends too. And that can also be a bit of a challenge. So if you're a buyer, make sure you are ready to go. Your property, either the switch is ready to be flipped as soon as you find a property. Don't wait another week or so to say, well, once we found it, then we're going to get started. You either get a rushed on listing, which then will end up impacting their saleability, which then delays the process to a seller not being properly educated or maybe well informed.
What I'd like to see as a listing agent getting an offer with a 48-hour clause is I'd like to know that their property is or is going to be listed on MLS. I'd like to know with what agent. I would like to possibly know the address, what price they're going on at. Some pictures would be great if I don't already have some from a historical MLS listing. I want to know everything about this other property because on a scale of 1 to 10, as far as I'm concerned, if I was selling a house, a 48-hour offer would be like a 1. Whereas cash offer, no conditions, would be a 10. Where would you rate a 48-hour offer as far as acceptability on the seller's behalf?
Well, the 48-hour depends on the market you're in as well. So if you are in a buyer's market, you might be more inclined to accept it. But if you're in a seller's market, that would be pretty low. A balanced market, it depends the type of product and your location. Now, people always want what somebody else has. So if you do have your property sold, all conditions removed except subject to the sale of the buyer's property, that looks pretty promising to buyers out there looking. I know I just spent the last couple of days showing properties to clients of mine. And if they had your standard conditions, which would be home inspection, financing, insurance, we weren't interested in looking at them. But if it was subject to the sale of buyer's property, those can and a lot of times are easily able to be bumped. So we've looked at those for the last couple of days, and there's been quite a few of them, only just to make sure that if it is a property that is desirable to my clients, we get fair opportunity. So we know they've already removed their home inspection. Whoever the buyer is, they've done their due diligence. This property has a little bit higher value if that's the last condition remaining. And that's how my clients see it.
Ideally, if you're looking to buy a property and sell your property, if you have the financial capability to bridge or pay cash for that other property, you're much better doing that than putting an offer in with a 48-hour clause, because that may actually increase the selling price because it's of an inconvenience to the seller. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing is, again, just fresh because I've just gone through this, the whole showing process, looking at subject to the sale of buyer properties here on Prince Edward Island. The buyer had asked, well, what is the current offer on the table? Do you know what that number is? What did they accept? And it's a fair question, but...
So you ask the listing agent and hope they tell you.
No, I did not do that. I did let my buyer client know that this is information that we are not privileged to. So we don't share that. Are somebody that listens to our podcast, now you know whether or not we're allowed to actually share that information. And I will know if you don't, because I will end up having one of my clients end up asking, can you find out what they actually accepted on this property? So I'll be telling them to listen to episode 73 so that they know what the answer to that is.
Under the Realtor Code, you're not allowed to reveal any part of an accepted offer or an offer for that matter. However, what that other agent tells you is may or may not align with that Realtor Code ideal.
Yeah, we have to ask the seller. So as long as the seller says we are allowed to share the information that's subject to the sale of the buyer's property, which is in the seller's best interest, then we are okay. But we cannot divulge any content or details from an agreement of purchase and sale because the buyer of that property owns that contract.
Let's get to your ice maker story dilemma.
The ice maker. So that's with regards to chattels and making sure that you're very clear with your agent and your communication. And if you're an agent, you're clear with your buyer client on what it is that they are expecting to see at closing in that home. Now, I did run into a situation. It was a new build, and we had looked at quite a few of the, they're basically the same, little differences in, you know, each one. And as we were going through them, some of the appliances were a little different. You know, the different brands, they had different features. Well, this came down to the fridge. Some of them had an ice maker in the fridge and some of them did not. Well, the unit that we ended up securing a contract on and closing on, there was no fridge in it during our viewing. So we were more concerned. My clients were more concerned to make sure that the fridge was included. They didn't want to have to purchase it. So we asked for a fridge, but nowhere did they say they wanted a fridge with an ice maker. Fast forward, closing day, we're doing our walkthrough, and it was the one point that just kind of impacted and affected the excitement of that final walkthrough. Because the fridge was just your standard fridge and it didn't have an ice maker. And it was the first time I heard them wanting this ice maker fridge, which I tried my best, but it turned out it would have cost them an extra couple $1,000s, which they weren't interested in getting into. So they have a brand new fridge. It's just they don't have the ice maker that I wasn't aware they wanted.
Stepping back, and not to sound too conspiratorial, but as a listing agent or a home seller that's building new homes and you get an offer that says it includes a fridge, they're going to put the cheapest fridge in there they can find because you didn't ask for a particular make or model that was in the other units with an ice maker. So they did what they're legally allowed to do.
No, and I understand that one would assume, and you never assume, that the same level and the same quality that you've seen in all the other spec homes were going to be there at this one. Now, they're great appliances. They were not low-end appliances. It's just the ones, there was two units with an ice maker and they came as a set with the stove. So they were able to get a bit of a discount deal where the other ones, higher grade stove, higher grade fridge, but not the ones with the ice maker. So they did well. They just didn't get their ice maker.
That's one of the major parts of a purchase and sale agreement when you're writing your offer. You know, we've got the price, we've got the deposit, closing date, pre-closing inspection date, any conditions, including a home inspection, insurance inspection. Maybe there's a septic tank inspection if it's a rural property. But within that same contract is a paragraph where you list what you want with that property. And I, too, have run into instances where you're dealing with vendors that aren't very honest. I'm not talking about this particular instance. I'm talking about another one where there is a orange, very high-end lawnmower that we asked for, but we called it a lawnmower. And we got there to close on the property. There is an old, used, green John Deere lawnmower there. If we had been specific and said, we're going after the Kubota model number this, serial number that, it has 92 hours on it, they can't switch it out. You maybe even include a picture of it.
That's what
so
I was
they don't
suggest.
Get confused.
Yeah.
But anything you want with the property, and this includes wood that's outside in the yard or in the basement, which it shouldn't be a fire hazard, sheds, what else can you think of? Obviously, furniture. Anything you want included in that sale, put it in the contract and be very specific, even if you have to have an additional sheet attached to that in the form of an appendix, listing those inclusions, because there's not a lot of room on the forms.
Yeah, a gray, just you mentioning wood. So we do have a clause that states there is a fuel adjustment and to make sure that there's oil or propane, whatever the heat source. If it's electric, obviously that's not applicable here. However, there are homes that do have wood And if there's a cord of wood or a couple cords of wood, if you don't ask for it, it's not considered a fuel. I mean, yes, it's a fuel source for the home, but it is not to be assumed that the seller has to leave their wood behind. That is one thing that I would highly recommend you're aware of. Now, can I tell a funny story about chattels?
Funnier the better. We can turn this into Michael and Patty's comedy real estate.
No, this, okay, so it wasn't funny back then. Today I can laugh. I had a closing on a property where, again, the buyers did comment during our viewing that they really liked the dining room table and chairs. And it did match. It was black with natural wood. And it did match the cabinetry because these property owners did paint the cabinets all black. When we got there at closing, my clients, and I did bring my son, who today wants nothing to do with real estate because of a few of my showings and final walkthroughs that I brought him to. This was the last one he came on because he thought my job was just too scary and too dangerous. We get in, she looks around, asks where the dining room table and chairs were. And I said, we didn't ask for them. And she said, I specifically asked for that dining room table and chairs. And I said, no, if I could recall correctly. And I said, I'm not disputing this. You did comment and compliment them, but we never asked. And I said, let me verify this. I knew it wasn't there, but just to try to de-escalate this, I said, let me just go back to our contract agreement and I'll read out what chattels we requested. Well, she got very, very angry with me, assuming that I was calling her a liar. So I read off the contract chattels. There was a lot of, I didn't say any words because it's not going to help if I feed a fire that's already brewing inside of the wife. The husband was a little taken back, although he, wanting to protect his wife, had to stand beside her and support her. This, I'll just fast forward to the end, escalated to she wanted to beat me up. She wanted to punch me. She wanted to break my nose is what she was going on about. She knew the sellers of this property. She was on the phone to the sellers telling them how she was going to assault me. I had to go outside this house. It was vacant, but I typically don't do this. I had to go outside, put my son in the vehicle, locked him in. I told him, do not under no circumstances come out of this vehicle. I had to stand outside to make sure I had a vehicle in between because she was out there yelling and screaming at me over the dining room table and chairs and in front of her two little ones, which were like 3 and 18 months. The profanities and the swearing. Well, the seller was texting the listing agent. The listing agent called me to make sure that I was okay because she heard that there might be a really bad situation, all because of the dining room table and chairs. So I do listen to my clients. I do make sure that I've not had anyone else want to hurt me. But that was really scary.
As a side note, you seem to attract these types of people. Maybe it's because of your nursing background and crazies look for people like you.
I stress chattels. That's all. I make sure whatever you want to have included. I don't have to share this story with my clients because I don't want them to think they have the rights to go ahead and try to beat me up or punch me or break my nose. I couldn't believe how intense. And I know this whole buying and selling is very intense. It's emotionally draining, taxing on people.
It's a kitchen table.
I realize that. Control the expectations. Ask questions, both if you're a buyer or seller and if you're a realtor dealing with the situation. Have great, great communication.
And if you want 55 different items in the house, we're not in the furnishing business. We're in the house business. So a lot of times agents will just tell you, listen, if you guys want to go back and forth on the 150 different items that are in this bed and breakfast, you can do so after the contract has all the conditions removed and we have the deposit in place. Because we're not in the furniture business. We're not in the car business.
And it does end up impacting your financing if you're a buyer, because the mortgage lenders are not interested in financing old furniture. They want to make sure the only part of the purchase that they're financing is the actual house, the home, and the land. They're not interested in all the content. So you have to be, you have to watch that. Now, just to end the dining room table and chairs, the seller made it very clear to these buyers. They weren't getting it anyways. Even if they did ask, it would not have been included because she loved this set. It was passed down from a grandmother or something that they refurnished.
So looking back, you could have written up an acknowledgement that just said the kitchen table is not included to avoid all this craziness. But of course, we always see these things afterwards, right?
Yeah, but just because someone says, ooh, I like that piece of furniture, doesn't mean now you have to write into your contract, this piece of furniture is not included.
Oh, absolutely. They only get what's in the contract, which again gets back to we're not in the furniture business, because if you have 150 different items, which we have had in purchase and sale agreements before, and the toilet brush is missing from the master bedroom ensuite bathroom, now they can walk away because that condition's been violated. You're best to keep your contracts clean, and typically what you see within those contracts are fridge, stove, washer, dryer,
dishwasher,
which is bolted in anyway, but it should be specified, over the range microwave, usually the major appliances. We don't usually get into couches and kitchen tables and stuff.
Even sheds,
most
though.
Of the time. Sheds, people seem to be psychologically attached to their sheds and they like to remove them.
Yeah.
They should probably be left there because they're a structure.
But not to be assumed.
But nothing is ever to be assumed. And anything that is said that you feel may come back at you, a good example might be there's an oil tank buried in the backyard. There's a bunch of old tires in the forest. The vendor's not going to remove the 17 cords of wood in the backyard. Put these in the form of an acknowledgement so when it does come time to close, it's not a he said, she said. You do have something to document written, which is more and more common with commercial real estate than it is residential. But there's nothing wrong with writing up acknowledgements every time something is said to protect yourself, even if it's not inclusive or attached to the purchase and sale agreement.
I agree.
I had a commercial deal years ago, and everything that was ever said was done in an amendment and had to do with environmental concerns and oil tanks and whatever. But anything that was ever said was acknowledged and it protected us. Moving on, if you are doing inspections, our home inspection clause says you're doing a home inspection. There has been some situations where people will show up with 15 different inspectors that are doing everything from air quality to other things that we'll get into in a minute here. If you are doing these other inspections, again, so you're not triggering someone, how would you put it, that's different and isn't going to beat you up, specify what inspections you're doing. Those inspections, and some of these you'll almost never see in Prince Edward Island, things like air quality tests, sewer lines with a camera, very rarely seen. I don't even think I've seen one done here. I've seen them done in Nova Scotia.
I've seen them done here.
How many?
Two.
Two?
Yeah.
You're 200% higher than me.
Yeah. And it's a septic company in outside of Cornwall.
Bringing a foundation expert, which would always be good if you get a block foundation, island stone, or the house is 150 years old. It's a combination of five different things. How about an asbestos expert? A lot of things you see that the home inspectors think is asbestos may or may not be asbestos. Like I know I had a home inspection done recently and the home inspector said, well, the tiles are 8 inches. It's asbestos. Fact is, if you do your research, asbestos tiles can be any size. And there are asbestos or non-asbestos tiles that are 8 inches as well. Have you come across that?
Yes. And just if there's an asbestos report attached to the listing, because we just came across this in the last week, the buyer's agent didn't know what to do with it. And they felt it was their responsibility to interpret what these finding results were. That, as much as the seller's done their due diligence, they provided the document, it's up to the buyer to go ahead and educate themselves, find out what that means. How is that going to affect them? You know, the areas of the home that did show signs or whatever the percentage, 10% and 30% of asbestos in the materials. So
they had an inspection test done because the house had asbestos and they had someone, an asbestos expert, write up a report?
There was a report attached to the listing.
Oh, it's an excellent idea. What did that report say? Where were the percentiles come from?
Where they actually were?
Well, you mentioned 10 and 30%.
Yeah, it had like the core of, I don't, I don't remember.
So what it was the chemical or the fabric makeup of whatever components were in the house may have been I was in one a few weeks ago, the ceiling tiles allegedly had asbestos, the flooring tiles allegedly had asbestos. Other places you'll see it more, commercial buildings, is asbestos insulation around the pipes. You've seen that from the furnace. But that's something you want to note when you're doing an inspection. If you're going to bring an asbestos expert with you, mention that. If you're going to bring in a surveyor with you to read the survey and show you how to read it and where the pins are, if that's something you want to do, if you're going to bring an electrician, a plumber, a mold expert. Do we have a mold expert other than yourself?
No, I usually, the only one that I know of is in New Brunswick.
And you learned something interesting about mold the other day. Don't use bleach.
Yeah, not to use bleach, which I was really surprised about.
That was on a seminar that was actually covering home inspections. It is mentioned, do not use bleach, use soapy water.
Or vinegar.
Because the bleach was, vinegar, because the bleach actually fed the mold because of its water content. Other inspections, radon, lead. Lead is visible, but a lot of people wouldn't know what it is. There's a lot of, and this was on that recent call as well, there's a lot of water pipes that my understanding was always KITEC, K-I-T-E-C, that you need to be afraid of because the connectors can fall off or the tubes will crack. The way they manufactured these tubes is the little strands of fiber run with the tube rather than at a 90 degree angle to the tube, so they would crack. Well, there's a multitude of plumbing systems that were introduced in the late 90s, early 2000s that have these problems. That's something you want to be aware of as well. Lead internet access, not really an inspection, but it would be nice to know what your internet access is like, and maybe run speedtest.net if you're on a questionable system to see what your access is going to be like, especially if you're working from home, which so many people are doing these days.
Yeah, so if internet access is important, the whole purpose of this is to make sure if you are not able to do your due diligence prior to because of you looked at this property, and it looks like there's other interest, you want to quick and get it secured and put a contract in. You want to make sure if you're aware that you are going to be getting some of these inspections because this is deemed important to you, that it is specified within the contract agreement so that no one can come back later and say, you're not allowed to do this task because you didn't specify or request it. Home inspections typically will cover, they don't cover internet, but they will cover everything that they're visibly able to see. They're not allowed to take things apart and look behind walls and that. If as a result of the home inspection, which is why you want to get on top of this early, I know some real estate professionals will say, well, let's make sure your financing is done first. We have 2 weeks and we can do your home inspection next week. Guess what you just did? You did a disservice to that buyer. And if you're a buyer listening, please don't listen to that advice. You should hopefully be more confident in your financing, that you're not pushing your home inspection to the end. Because if there's something that the home inspector red flagged, which, you know, the electrical, or if there is a plumbing issue or there's foundation issues, now you only have a minimum amount of time, especially if there's a backup offer on the property, to get one of these other secondary experts in under that home inspection clause or condition to meet your deadline. So get on top of this stuff immediately, because the home inspection clause should allow you to be able to explore all these different, you know, experts looking at the different systems that our homes have. However, if you are somebody that wants a mold test done and you know it right on the onset, write it in. Make it clear within your contract.
Just like the inclusions, be specific about everything and everyone will be a lot happier and no one's going to be beating anybody up.
They're breaking my nose.
Selling, I don't know if I would call it swap land, but have you ever had a perk test done on a piece of property that looks absolutely perfect? It looks like a golf course. And they dig a hole to do the percolation test, which is done to install a septic system to check the permeability of the soil and how water will flow through it and where the water table is. Have you ever done that and found the water table was just like a foot or two below the ground?
Yes, I've seen not as bad as that, but the other one that I had spoken to you about where there was an engineer septic, engineer perk test done, and it came in as a Cat 1. And years later, like...
You mean a perk test done by an engineering company?
By an engineering company.
Opposed to a septic company. Typically, when you get into larger... I shouldn't even say larger. When you get into subdivisions, anytime you're doing more than probably three lots or more, usually you'll get an engineering company to do it. If it's just yourself doing a single building lot or a single spot on acreage you're building on, usually it's just a septic tank company or someone that's approved by the provincial government. You can Google gov.pe.ca qualified septic installers, and most of them will be able to do a perk test.
Yeah, well, this one came in at like a Cat 3 and Category 3, which was not what the buyers had assumed they were getting, and they were quite upset with it all. And this land is nice and high.
Well, Category 1 is perfect. You dig a hole, put your septic in. Category 2, you have to add some fill. Category 3 is an engineered system. So rather than it costing you between $0 because you're putting a hole in, to maybe a couple grand for some fill, an engineered system could be 25, 35 grand plus or minus. So it's pretty substantial, especially if you're buying a lot that costs you 25 grand to have to put another 25 or 35 grand into for an engineered system.
Yeah, so I've had this question asked to me many times, Michael. I'm going to ask you, because a lot of the agents and I have had sellers ask me, if I'm a seller and I'm going to list my piece of land onto the market, should I do a perk test prior to listing it?
So you're selling land.
Correct.
How much land?
Let's say 3 acres.
3 acres is a pretty big chunk of land, so I could basically put my septic system anywhere, right?
Correct.
So where am I doing my test? Am I going to do it like most people in the best, highest, and driest point near the road? Then you're going to build somewhere else, which is Category 3, but I got a Category 1 and a quarter. To answer that, if it's a building lot, I would do the perk test, and I would do it in the best time of year possible because I'm trying to present the property in the best light possible. If it's acreage, it's a little trickier. If I was to do a perk test, I would probably do it where most people are going to build their house, but with the understanding that the purchaser may want to do additional perk tests because they may not want to build in that spot. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I would definitely do a perk test because I'm a big believer in packaging properties properly, having the septic pumped, having the home inspection done. Love to have a survey and a plot plan done. Everything done so the buyer can come in with a clean offer. And I think that applies to land, as you described it, or building lots would be smaller and easier to perk because there's only really one place to perk it.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. You know, you could do a perk test on it, the highest spot, but maybe the views are in...
Driest spot.
The driest. Yeah, the driest. Okay, driest, usually people are looking for something with, you know, the views in that. But the views would be better at the back of the property. A buyer assumes, well, if that's what it perked at, that's not what it perked at every corner of this property. That's in one specific area, whatever the site was. And you should be able to ask and make sure that aligns with what you're looking to, how you're looking to develop that property. And if it doesn't, you're absolutely right, Michael. As a buyer, do your own perk test then.
One of the questions you get sometimes that is kind of funny is you'll have 60 acres for sale and they'll ask you if a perk test has been done.
I know.
And it's like, why?
Yes.
You know, you could build anywhere on this 60 acres. Well, maybe. One of the things that I do is I use the agricultural farming computer, which you can get access to on the island, and it has the soils maps, which will give you a very good idea as to where you can build. The other thing you can do, if you're a Boy Scout or you're into nature, is just look at the vegetation and the growth, the satellite photos and imagery. You learn that, and you can get a pretty good idea of what the land is like. But my initial question was, or point is, just because you see a piece of property that looks absolutely perfect, in this particular case, I've noticed properties selling in areas that I know the water table is like at a foot or two below the surface, and they can't do anything with those properties. I don't even think you could use an engineered system.
I've seen a Cat 4 developed on the island.
It would be very expensive and not ideal.
Yes.
But just because a property looks perfect and it's being used for grazing cattle or sheep, doesn't necessarily make it a good building plot because you haven't presumably done the tests or received copies of the tests that the vendor's done.
Correct.
That's it.
Yeah. And PERC tests, if it's an engineered PERC test completed, they don't expire if it...
Well, it's not an engineered PERC test. It's a PERC test done by an engineering company.
Correct. They, according to the province and as per the province rules, they do not expire, because that's another question that I get asked with regards to PERC tests on properties. Now, if it's just a regular, you know, excavator doing a PERC test and it's been about 10 years, some... If you are the PERC test, if you're the buyer and you've hired a PERC test company, an excavator to install your septic system, they may insist on a new one just in case the land configuration has changed or...
Fiona,
you know, the amount of foliage that is now maybe starting to decay on the ground, that will end up impacting. The one that I talked to you about, Michael, and I know you're very knowledgeable in this, but the type of soil is what ended up impacting. Even though it looked like it was nice and high, the soil wasn't porous, and that's what ended up. It was a black soil, I believe.
That is called, I can't remember. Is that Kildare? No, Kildare is more sandy. I can't remember, but it's like a black goo. It's basically compost.
Yes.
But on these maps that we have access to, they will show you the soil's type, and there is an actual PDF guide for that, but you pretty well have to be trained in that field to even understand what most of the codes mean. I know probably 6 or 8 of them that are very common: Cabot, Kildare, Halliburton. What else is there? I'm trying to think of the one that's the gooey one.
Yeah, the day I asked you, you knew right off the top of your head. So I was quite...
That memory has faded. That's it for today.
No, it's all good. So thank you for listening to the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, guiding and navigating you through the buying and selling process and a little bit and everything Prince Edward Island. We appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in and listening to our podcast and our jam-packed, full of information episodes that we do every week. So until next time, have a great day, and we look forward to chatting again, Michael.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Be sure to give us a star rating and some feedback. It would be greatly appreciated that all 3 or 4 of our listeners do so.
Until next time, have a great day. Bye.